in the Ozarks, back on the farm.
Yes, come on in and set a spell, friends. Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, Mae Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this, that, and other thing in Ozark folklore and traditions, and just generally speaking, sort of brighten up your day in May on this Saturday. Howdy, Mae.
Howdy, Fred. Glad to see you this morning. Always glad to see you. How are all you, all my friends this morning? You know, it started to rain a bit here, but it stopped now and the sun's out. Oh, I bet we don't have any rain. What do you think about it, Fred? We're in for a drought, I think. What do you think, Henry? Of course, they would have the worst look at it, but I guess I think we're in for a drought. Goodness. I was reading in my hometown paper, the Stone County Republican, where some rural subscriber was discussing blackberry winter. You know, this blackberry winter we have when the blackberries are all blooming, you know. Cold spell. Well, I guess we had it here a while back. Like to froze to death a few days back. Well, anyway, this fellow said his wife asked, where is this blackberry winter we always have? And he said, well, the blooms are not off the blackberries yet, and I still have a faith in the old-timers' predictions. I think we'll see some rain and cooler weather, but not enough to break the drought. And then he said that the old-timers always said winds from the north in the spring mean a drought. And we've had all our wind, almost all, from the north this spring. I thought that, and somebody else told me that was a fact. And we're now in a drought, and it's just pitiful. Here in the city, we never realize a drought like they do in the rural areas because we don't farm. And then when folks want their gardens or lawns watered, they just turn on the hose. But we're having a real drought, and I'm afraid it's going to be worse. Now, here's a little something I want to talk about before I forget it. One time, not long back, I spoke about the old superstition about planting cedar trees, you know. The late Otto Rayburn was writing about this very thing not long before he died last year in his magazine. The cedar is so remarkable for its utility and beauty, and yet there has always existed such a taboo against transplanting cedar trees. Some way they say they won't grow very often, and they don't. But they used to believe that when the tree grew to sufficient height to cast a shadow long enough to cover the grave of the person who transplanted it, that person would die. So it scared people to death by planting cedar trees. I doubt if it ever happened very often, or maybe it did happen often, and that's what got the superstition going. But like all other superstitions, it was a sort of primitive lore. But they used to get a very old person to set the young cedar tree. That is, hold it and put it down in the hole and put the first dirt up against it. Because before the tree was tall enough to cast a long shadow, the old person would have lived his years and gone on anyway. Vance Randolph, in one of his books, tells about some Ozark boys he knew who hired out to a nursery to transplant red cedars. And when their parents learned what they were doing, they were horrified and ordered them to quit the job immediately. Cedar, if taken into the house for a Christmas tree, they used to think, must be removed from the house before the eve of the old Christmas. You know, old Christmas was January the 5th. It was yet kept by a good many people when I was a child. They kept Christmas on January the 5th, the old Christmas. And they believed that the cattle knelt at night, midnight, I mean, of Christmas Eve. Some old folks said they saw them kneel, cattle all kneeling. Some used to say that you could plant a cedar tree and do away with the superstition by putting a flat rock in the hole before you set the tree. When I talked about this, Mrs. Alma Toller of Greenfield, Missouri, wrote me that her son brought small cedar trees in for Christmas, had two or three times, watered them and took care of them, then planted them in the yard later, and they grew fine. Well, the old superstition wasn't so much that they wouldn't grow. They generally grew all right, but the superstition was about when they were big enough to cast a shadow, the length of the grave of the one who planted them. Well, we don't need to worry. Superstitions are as old as time. You can't uproot them. They were sort of the childhood of the race, you know, and there are millions of people who yet believe in them, and not just Ozarkans by any means. I could sit here and tell you for an hour of my experiences with strange superstitions with them in many places in America I have gone. And they are as deeply rooted sometimes as people's religious beliefs. And my, how I found them among the soldiers during the late war when I was on KWK and mingled so much with the soldiers. I'm not a very superstitious person, but often I keep some of the old ones just to respect the old Ozarkans I knew in my childhood. I know it's rather hard to get a little cedar tree to grow as a rule when transplanted. Mary Elizabeth Mankey of Forsyth, that blessed woman writer and poet, friend of my whole life until she died, she wrote this little poem one time. I think maybe I've quoted it to you before. A little baby cedar tree I brought up from the glen. It did not like my little dog. It feared my old red hen. It stretched its sticky little arms, and all day long it cried. I'm sorry now I moved it, for I see that it has died. Well, there are all sorts of things, you know. Well, now to change the subject, I've been wanting to read to you a little thing sent to me some time back by my good friend Miss Alice Boone of this city. She's a former schoolteacher. Very fine woman. She said this was in the child's storybook of 80 years ago. It was a sort of takeoff for warning people against using big jaw-breaking words. You know, it's foolish. Call a spade a spade. Now, just have patience till I read it, because I think it's funny as all get out. And believe me, it's not easy to read, but it makes sense if you follow it out. So here goes. It says, the title is, Do Not Use Big Words. In promulgating your cogitations or articulating your sentimentalities in amicable philosophical or psychological observations, beware of platitudinous ponderosity. Let your conversational communication possess a conciseness, compacted comprehensibleness, coalescent consistency, and concatenated cogency. Eschew all conglomerations of babblement and asinine affectations. Let your extemporaneous discantings and unpremeditated expatiations have intelligibility and voracious vivacity without rodomontade or bombast. Sedulously avoid all polysyllabic profundity, pompous prolixity, ventriloquial verbosity, and vaniloquent vapidity. Shun double entendres. Prurient jocosity and pestiferous profanity, obscure or apparent. Believe it or not. Do you know that when I was in the hospital two or three years ago, was having an awful ear dizziness, and it just, the doctors didn't know what to do with me hardly, and I think maybe I've whipped it and beat it, although I've had it a little bit for the last two or three weeks. A renowned doctor called on me to examine me in the hospital. He put me, he was kind of a doctor and brain man and psychiatrist and so on. No, he wasn't a psychiatrist, he's a brain doctor. And he put me to reading just such a sort of thing as this is that I've got off. I was to read it rapidly to see if I had my reactions all right in both my eyes and my speech. I rattled it off like a house afire. And he was delighted as well as amused. He just sat there and laughed. He laughed and laughed. He said he had never had it read by anyone who read it so fast, and that many folks couldn't read it at all. So I patted myself on the back. Well, you know, there never was anything the matter with my talking apparatus. Nobody ever accused me of that. Miss Boone sent me also this batch of stuff beginning with F. Now, if you kids want a copy, send me a stamped envelope, I'll send you one. It's a tongue twister. We used to have these old tongue twisters when I was a kid. And we'd sometimes have them in school, and we'd have them at play parties and all. Well, here it is. Fickle Frank fought 55 fist fights. After Fickle Frank fought 55 fist fights, Funny Fanny fried Fickle Frank 5 finny fish. Funny Fanny's 5 finny fish filled Fickle Frank full. Fickle. Now, I just made one mistake. Filled Fickle Frank full. Well, it's a funny world. Well, now I want to say thanks again to dear, dear women for trading stamps waiting out here for me. They send them all here now. And again, here they are today, and I had got some last week, to help buy the bus for the children with retarded minds up at the state home in Marshall, Missouri. I'm told there are about 300 on the waiting list all the time. June the 17th, I'm to go there, and I'll have more to tell you about how it's coming along, but it's coming fine, they say. Mrs. Wyman, who is the head of this in-gathering of stamps, told me yesterday that she has worked and worked sorting and pasting, and now we have 70 books all full of all sorts of stamps. You'd be amazed how many trading stamps there are in the country. But all of them are good, send any kind. And then several more books she has, partly full. These will be traded for cash to help buy the bus. And we have had about $20 in money sent also, just a dollar here and there, and sometimes a little more in a letter. Thanks so much, so much. A gentleman, a Frisco man, stopped by my home this week to bring me a couple of full books of stamps sent by his sister, Miss Blakesley, a teacher at Monette. That was indeed a lovely thing for her to do, and a lovely thing for him to bring them. And Mr. Blakesley is so interested in Ozark dialect, and he wants to know, he asked me where he could go to hear the most of the old Ozarkian speech, which is, of course, a very old English speech of Chaucer and Spenser and John Evelyn and Shakespeare and the old masters. I wished I might have been able to direct him, but I told him at least that he would have to leave the highways and go on the smaller roads and byways. We still have it, although it's passing, but so prevalent when I was a child. I'll tell you more about it. I was going to tell you, but I haven't the time because of one or two things. I was going to give you some words in here, but I'll give them next time. Come riddle to me, they used to say. That's come fix this out. Work this thing out for me. Dear old lady, her husband drank, and she'd say to my mother, Miss Kennedy, come riddle to me what I'm going to do with Elmer. He's drunk all the time. I wish I'd had the riddling of Elmer. I'd do what an old man said once, baptize him three times and just bring him up twice. Well, now, hastily, before I forget, Pop Whitmer, that tickled Fred. Fred's a preacher. That's a good thing for Fred to do once in a while. Pop Whitmer, who usually celebrates his birthday in June with what has become famous as Junebug Day, will not have the celebration this year. He's almost totally blind now. And also, he's going to try to go on that day to Richmond, Wayne County, Indiana, to a family reunion of his people, the Whitmers. And they're a very fine old Indiana family, and they want him to come, and I hope he can go. And if he lives, we can have Junebug Day next June. Now, Pearl DeHaven, Miss Pearl DeHaven, reminds me, and I'm glad she did, that next Sunday, tomorrow, is shut-in day all over America for the shut-ins. And she says, don't forget it. Pearl herself is in a wheelchair, and she's a very grand person. Though she's very active in her brain and her work for the national organization of what they call indoor sports, the handicapped people of America. We have a fine chapter here, and I often go, and I love them all, and we have a great time. She says just anything, a card or a little gift or a call on a shut-in, or even on the phone, or a little car ride is wonderful to them. Above all things, a little car ride. Please don't forget the shut-ins. Do something. Well, I know a lot of you are worried about war like I am, but maybe we won't have war. Let me give you this tiny poem. I have time because I want you to remember it. They cannot shell his temple nor dynamite his throne. They cannot bomb his city nor rob him of his own. They cannot cause him panic nor cut off his supplies. They cannot take his kingdom nor hurt him with their lies. Though we face war and worry and feel their goad and rod, we know above confusion there always will be God. Goodbye.